at the very end of the parsha, Lyle reminded us that we're told about how God's presence, God's glory, God's kavod was found in the sanctuary, and how it was a guide for the Jewish people. And what that reminds us, this very compelling conclusion to this book of Exodus, is that while it's very nice to build a beautiful space, our ancestors understood that the purpose of that space was as a place for prayer. And prayer, my friends, is exceedingly hard and difficult. So I'm going to ask you a real and an honest question, and I hope someone, at least one, will be able to give a real and honest answer. If you have ever been bored while praying, please raise your hand. So there are a few holy people in here who did not raise their hand. And mostly liars or people who just didn't have the energy to lift their hand up. What I want to propose to you is that boredom is a tool and a guide to let you know when you're living your life incorrectly. Because boredom is a way in which we tune out to the world around us and think there's nothing to do. And if you're a kid, you always know your parents say, go find something to do, right? So it's the same in prayer. And one of the things that has been lost over the years for the Jewish people, which is sometimes more readily available for those who are students of yoga or Jewish meditation, is that prayer is an advanced spiritual technology which uses our energy and our focus to take us somewhere. And so what I've brought together on this sheet are the seven main paradigms, the seven energetic pathways that are built deep into different sections of our tradition as to how we can use prayer. Because if you're bored in prayer, the tools are there to change your experience. And we don't talk about it enough. So I'm going to run through the methods, and we'll do a poll along the way after we finish as to which method is the one that has most connected to you in the past. And for those who remember, I asked before the Amidah to pay attention to what you were feeling or thinking or experienced while you said that. So let's look at these paradigms of prayer. Number one. The words of the prayer said in their simplicity at the proper times are sufficient. This comes out of Brachot, out of the Talmud, and it is your most basic thing. Just being here and saying the words, the prayers for Shabbat on Shabbat, the prayers for the morning at the morning. Zygazunt, you did your duty, and that's enough. And that's a wonderful reminder that sometimes it's okay to be bored also. That just having this process and going through it is enough, regardless of what our internal state may be. But let's keep moving. Number two pushes back on that, and it says, words said without proper attention given to them, what we call kavanah, are insufficient. That if you're not focused in some way on what you're saying, then your prayer has no meaning and no significance. And the rabbis debated this because that already is a much higher standard than saying, let's just show up and say the prayers, right? I don't have to, that doesn't make any claims on me, and that's enough. So they were hesitant, but they had to state this because there are a lot of people who are not here today and over the generations because number one wasn't enough for them. And their boredom, their detachment, their inability to find a way to connect with prayer made them conclude falsely that nothing's happening here and therefore I'd rather go to the mall, I'd rather do something else. So this second state says that we have some level of focus that we have to marshal, or we're not doing anything. Our third category here is the words of prayer known by rote from repeated utterance are changed from words into a mantra by which one can enter a prayerful trance. And the words, therefore, are a path to a state of being that is primary. So how many people, first of all, know what a mantra is? So can I get someone to tell us what's a mantra?
Something you say over and over because you believe it.
Okay, it may be something you say over and over because you believe it. Anyone else have a slightly different version or an expansion on that?
Words that you say over and over to allow you to reach a state of meditation.
Beautiful. So I think both of those are true. And it's that second one I want to focus on. The Buddhists are very good at outlining energy, but it is equally true that our Jewish tradition outlines this. And we have what's called monkey mind. Our minds get distracted and they go off in all sorts of directions. The brain has a lot of capacity, right? I can think about a couple things at once, like what's happening at Kiddush right now and when do we get down there and when will the rabbi be done? I'm wondering about that. So a mantra, among other things, absorbs that excess capacity so that you can be in the moment. It's one of the reasons I taught myself when I was living in Israel, I memorized the Amidah, the weekday Amidah, so that I can pray with my eyes closed and the words just absorb it and I can have my intention focused elsewhere. I can have an experience within my body. And it is doable, even if you don't understand the Hebrew, with repetition, if you want that, you can learn that. We hear every Shabbat, after all. So that's a third pathway into prayer. And let's go to number four. And this, I think, I'm going to turn and look at the cantor while I'm here, because she helps us with this. Music is what truly opens the heart. The words of prayer, which some do not understand and others disagree with, unite us to the past while giving shape to the music, which is primary. So let me first, at this point, let's just stop before we get too far in there. Of these four, and we have a beautiful, we've had PDX services, we had our Moroccan Shabbat, we have the Nusach and the melodies that we all know and congregational melodies. Of these four so far, which one speaks to you the most? Number one, let's see, raise a show of hands. So that, I think, is telling. Just the words on their own aren't enough for anyone. That means there's responsibility placed on us, by the way, with that. Number two, having focus, having some notion of what the words mean, connection. Okay? We got a couple, three, four, five, six. You're allowed to have your hands go back and forth. You're allowed to have more than one of these speak to you. I've gone through different points, sometimes in the same service, where all of these are my pathways into prayer. All right, mantra. Look at you guys. Right. The prayers are a way of filling us. There's a notion of words that are the ivrit shkoa befiv, that they are just that roll off of our tongue, and that we are allowed to go somewhere because of that. Four, music. This is one where I normally think we have the most, right? Music is powerful. It cuts through past the cerebral. It connects our hearts very often. Music is powerful. It's why, Cantor, you got good job security. Don't worry. All right, so we got a little show of hands. Let's keep going now. And a little deeper in some ways. Five, prayer is a form of divine theater in which each prayer must reinvest his or her lines with new meaning. One's inner emotional tone changes the meaning to match the convictions of one who speaks them. We are blessed with an ancient tradition that echoes through time, through different social conditions, different understandings of God, of theology, of peoplehood, of our role in the world. And since that time, we have a body of interpretation in books which try to readjust the meaning of these set words that connect and unite us around the world with a meaning that we can connect to on our own. But on the personal level, the prayers ask us to do that same process. In theater, at least in the Stanislavski school, you create a backstory to the prayers so that you have a character around them. And what this notion speaks about is how the prayers connect to me. In the weekday Amidah, there's a prayer called Birkat Hashanim, which is a prayer about agricultural success. Now, I do have a little garden in front of my house, but if that was my sustenance, well, I'd lose that last 7 pounds. But it's a prayer for abundance and prosperity. And it's a prayer that you can say when you're feeling abundant. And it's a prayer that you can say as a request to feel abundant when you're in a mode of scarcity, when you feel like your life is insufficient in some ways. That these prayers need our participation to supply meaning to them. I once got to study with the great Hasidic Rabbi Gedalia Fleer, and he said he would teach his Hasidim to focus on a single line. If a line in the prayer jumped up, he'd say, just keep saying that and think about it and forget saying the rest of the prayers. So first of all, you got Orthodox rabbis saying, don't try to say every word, and a lot of Jews try to say every word. We feel a OCD compulsion to say every word in the prayer book. Find a line that matters and just dwell on that. Say it again, because what you are doing is you're putting your energy and your meaning into that line. And when you come across it again and again, it'll give you a little hit, give you a charge, which is what our job is for. 6, I think this one is also probably one that speaks to a lot of us. Prayer is a communal activity. What transpires within the body of the community is more important than what happens within any given individual. So there's a couple of ways we can understand that. One, on a very superficial level, is it's enough that because we're a community, we gather together as a community, and we can gather together to celebrate a simcha like Lyle becoming a bar mitzvah, and that's what's important, us as a whole, as a unit. I think there's ways in which that speaks to us, even though we're living in an age of radical individualism. But I think there's a way that that happens. Does that resound to anyone? Does anyone connect with that? I think we do. There's another aspect to that also, which happens sometimes with music, sometimes in congregations who have very deep and evolved prayer lives, where there is a resonance that happens in the room which you can perceive and which is greater than what's happening in any individual. And you can tune into that and pick it up. There's a place in LA in Pico Robertson. I won't mention it, but it was a very right-wing place. I couldn't speak to anyone in there about their views on the world. But in the Amidah, there was a type of communal silence that was so complete and utter that we became transported. So what the community does affects us as well. Finally, and this gets back, I think, a little bit to what you, Lyle, was talking about also with the sacrifices. We have to remember that our ancestors brought animals with whom they had a connection that were their forms of wealth, that were parts of their own work effort that they gave. And we don't have that ability, but prayer is a substitute for sacrifice. That's just written in there. And therefore, the prayer, you and I, we are the korban. We're the sacrifice. And that means that when we think about it, what are we bringing? Now, on Yom Kippur, I think a lot of people understand this seventh point a lot better, because it's the one day of the year where a lot of Jews get a little sense of awe and fear. Like, my God, maybe I haven't been living up well enough. How many of you does that ever make sense of on Yom Kippur? Few hands here and there. Some people are sort of embarrassed or don't want to say it. So those are the times where we bring ourselves as an asham offering, a guilt offering, a sin offering, where we reflect on our lives and say, oi, gewalt. But there are also times when you can come in and your daughter just got engaged, or you got engaged, or you're celebrating the birth of your first grandchild, or your son has become a bar mitzvah, where you enter as an offering of gratitude, a thanksgiving offering. So how and who we are and what we're bringing itself becomes the offering, the prayer. So I have on here on the bottom a number of questions for you to take home and to discuss. Because we can't do the work here. I can only raise this. But this is a lifetime's work. We pray not because Grandpa did it. We pray because, when done right, it is an expression of some of the deepest human needs. And no one can do the work for us. We can train you, we can lead you, we can build skills, but you have to find a way in and use your boredom as its own guide. If you were bored, someone or something is telling you, wake up and pay attention. There's more here than meets the eye. Shabbat Shalom.